The Hayes Advantage with Kathleen Hayes and Vonnie Quinn. Listen on demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Now available free for both iPhone and Android devices.
Now we want to bring in our next guest, who is in fact a Bloomberg reporter, Keith Naughton. We know him very well from his reporting on automakers for GM and the like, and he's always very helpful. Good afternoon, Keith.
Good afternoon.
First of all, quick reaction maybe to the 4.5% jump today that we saw in vehicle production here in the U.S.
Yeah, well, it is a sign that that autos, as they have been doing, are kind of leading us out of the recession. They let us in, and now they're leading us out. So you see all of the automakers really starting to raise their production in anticipation of an even better year next year.
And, of course, this is something that is tied into a terrific story that you worked on with a couple of our Bloomberg News colleagues, I should say. Vonnie and I have been covering the right to work vote in Michigan. We spoke to Governor Snyder, Governor Rick Snyder, just, I would say, less than an hour before he signed the bill. We spoke to Merrick Masters from the Wayne State University Labor Institute to get kind of a more pro-labor look at this right-to-work law, clearly against it. But your story today that you wrote with John McCormick and Chris Christoph is Michigan right-to-work law viewed as a domino redefining the Rust Belt. Wow.
Yeah, this really opens the door to right-to-work throughout the Rust Belt, throughout the industrial Midwest, because you know, the new motto among right-to-work advocates is, if it can happen in Michigan, it can happen anywhere.
Keith, what's your gut instinct? Will this right-to-work law stay, or will it be overturned at some point?
Well, I mean, that's key. I mean, one of the things that might cause people to pause before pursuing additional right-to-work legislation is what the political fallout might be for Governor Snyder or for Michigan's Republican legislature. The unions are vowing to go after them, to unseat them in 2014 when Snyder will be up for re-election. And the unions in this region obviously have a history of success. Just ask President Obama.
Keith, what about the issue here? You're in Michigan. You talk to a lot of people. You talk to people in the auto industry. Because there's two sides here. One is that, look, why should people have to pay union dues if they're not part of the union? They're not forced to join a union, but the way it works now, they have to pay the dues. So that's part of the right to work change. Mm-hmm. Others say, well, hey, don't join the union if you don't want to. But the union does things on behalf of the workers. So it's only fair. It only makes sense that if you're going to take a job, because you freely took the job at a company that has a contract with a union, that you have to pay the dues. I mean, I can kind of see the logic on both sides.
Sure. I mean, you know, the unions argue that they are providing a service. They're bargaining you a contract which gives you your wages and benefits, and that, you know, dues are a payment for that service. And that in any other situation, you know, you can't go into a car dealership and choose to either pay for a car or just take one home for free. So that's the union argument. The Republicans, beyond, you know, I guess they're trying to make a fairness argument, beyond that, to them it's a business issue. They feel like companies avoid the Rust Belt, the unionized Midwest, for fear of high wages and high benefits and strong unions that can strong-arm them into paying those wages and benefits. And that's why you see so much development in the South. So what the Midwestern states hope, particularly the forces for right to work, is that they can put themselves on an equal footing with the Southern states.
Keith, if you would, take us back to the beginning, because Michigan is really the birthplace of the union in general.
It is. This is where the UAW was born. So many battles have been fought. So many famous union leaders come out of here, like Walter Reuther of the UAW, and of course Jimmy Hoffa, and his son now runs the Teamsters, and has said that there will be a civil war over this now. So there is a lot of anger over this issue. And, you know, this is a very unionized state, much more unionized than the nation as a whole. But, you know, unions in general have dropped off. So the percent of unionized workers in the state is 17.5%. So, you know, close to, I guess, 1 in 5. That's more than the national rate, but it's not as high as you might think.
So sentiment in Michigan seems to me to be pretty divided.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Michigan itself, we all think of Michigan as Detroit, but Michigan itself is a divided political landscape, like so many states, including the state of New York. When you go outstate, it becomes much more Republican, much more conservative. There are some large cities on the west side of the state, like Grand Rapids, that are very conservative and very Republican. So you end up with a legislature that is Republican oftentimes because so much of the state is in Republican territory. What has happened to balance that in the past is there have often been Democratic governors. But now, Governor Snyder was elected after Democrat Jennifer Granholm 2 years ago, and he was elected as a moderate and had said he would not sign right-to-work legislation, and that has now all changed.
Yeah, there's some suggestion that perhaps he's being put under pressure in the sense that he might have to face a Republican challenger in the next primary if he didn't put this back on the agenda.
Right, and he may get pressure from the other side, too. All the independents who voted for him may flee, is what the union's view of the situation is. It's a tough spot for him, and he definitely did change, which is always hard for a politician to explain. But his explanation here is that the union itself, the UAW in particular, put this issue in play when they pushed a ballot measure to put collective bargaining, to protect collective bargaining as part of the Michigan Constitution. That measure was on the November ballot, and it failed. It failed by a lot. And Snyder's point of view is that put the whole topic of right to work in play, because that constitutional amendment would have prevented the legislature from pursuing right to work. So when it failed, it sort of gave the legislature a green light.
What about these studies on right-to-work states versus unionized states? When you talk to Merrick Masters, his research suggests that workers have higher compensation. They make more money in unionized states compared to right-to-work states. Other research shows that I think something like 8 of the 10 lowest unemployment rates are in right-to-work states or something like that. I mean, when you look at the research, what do you see, Keith? Is there a definitive answer about whether or not right to work versus being unionized is a help or a hindrance to workers?
You know, there is not clear evidence of job creation, and that's always hard to pin that down. But you can look at wage rates and personal income and see that that right-to-work states have a higher incidence of people at below the poverty level and lower wages. If you just look anecdotally in the auto industry, as we do in our story today, you can look at Hyundai, which makes cars down in Montgomery, Alabama, in a non-union plant. And their labor costs, if you combine wages and benefits, are about $44 to $48 an hour. Now, the Detroit automakers, their labor costs are about $10 an hour higher, $58 an hour, the combination of wages and benefits. And they're unionized plants, so there's a $10 an hour disparity. That's what fuels the forces of right to work right there.
Wow. Keith, how is this debate being played out in the public arena? Are we seeing ads on television, debates?
You know, you're seeing a lot of debate on this. About 12 or 13,000 people showed up in Lansing on the day of the vote. It inflames a lot of passions. There's been editorials in the Detroit newspapers. So it is right here, and I think also throughout the Midwest, it is a very hot topic, and people are wondering, you know, what comes next. You have these Republican governors in Ohio, in Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin, who seem inclined to favor right to work. Some of them have even said they would sign it, but at the moment they're saying it's not on their agenda. But you know what? That's exactly what Rick Snyder said, 5 months ago.
So this, of course, we're talking a lot about the auto industry, but another big unionized industry is government workers, certainly teachers. And the head of the Teachers Education, the Education Association in Michigan, I believe Steve Cook, has been one of the real vocal advocates of fighting this.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, it really brought out unionized workers of all stripes. And the teachers feel particularly put upon as teachers. They can't strike. They don't have that powerful weapon that UAW members have typically. So this goes way beyond just industrial workers. I know that's what we all think of when we think of unionized members, but this is white collar workers as well.
Keith, Now that it's a right-to-work state, at least in the very short term until it gets overturned, that doesn't mean that workers can't join a union. So you can still carry on life exactly as it was, and you can still be a member of the United Auto Workers. But the overall question, I suppose, is will the United Auto Workers Union have enough firepower then to actually enact any new collective bargaining agreements or other agreements?
That's exactly right. What this does is it chokes off the life's blood of the union, its revenue stream, dues. And we talked.
What are dues?
Well, that's what comes out of your paycheck each month.
But roughly, I mean, how much?
It varies depending on how much money you make and which union you work for, you know. But it can be a really varied cost, and you know, people might be motivated to say no, thank you, and still take the wages and benefits. As I was saying, Sean McElinden from the Center for Automotive Research estimated that probably 20% of people will stop paying dues, and the ones most likely are those new workers going into auto factories that, and we've talked about this on your show before, that make that lower wage. You know, they have the two-tier wages in auto factories now, so the new workers only make $16 an hour, whereas the senior workers are making twice that.
What is your sense, Keith, of how the management at the big three auto firms, for example, the Alan Mulally's of the world, would they be happy? Are they keeping quiet, thinking, oh boy, we hope this sticks? Or they're saying, we have problems with unions sometimes, but we've developed a way of working with them that somehow works for our overall model.
You know, I was actually with a bunch of auto executives last night. Their public stance, Kathleen, as you know, is to be neutral. They don't want to get in the middle of this. But you know, the automakers, particularly after they've been through so much in these last few years, have put a great deal of effort into improving union relations. And what they see happening here is something that really is corrosive on union relations. You're going to inflame all these unions, and that's going to make it harder for everybody at the bargaining table.
That's interesting. That's what I'm sorry, continue the thought, but I think we assume the management would say, oh, go ahead with this, but you can imagine how it could create more problems than it solves.
It would, absolutely. They want happy workers. They don't want angry workers on their assembly lines. And the companies have put a great deal of effort into bargaining more competitive contracts. That $58 an hour number I just mentioned to you at the Detroit automakers is down from $75 an hour, and this is through a great deal of work since probably the middle of last decade to make themselves more competitive. And they did it in a fashion where while people certainly don't like to give concessions, they end up at the end of the day feeling like it was fair. There's no one thinking that this right-to-work legislation that got rammed through a lame-duck legislature was fair.
Okay. Keith Naughton, thank you so very much for joining us. We'll tweet that story right out. Michigan right-to-work law viewed as domino redefining Rust Belt. Keith Naughton, one of the co-authors, at Vonnie Quinn, at Kathleen_Hayes.
You can listen to The Hayes Advantage weekdays at 12:30 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2012, Bloomberg LP.